fly in the sky. I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
Once again, it is time for the Something Something Cast.
Something Something Cast.
I am James Atten with
Podcast Rob.
All right, sir. We wanted it. We're doing it.
We are. Did we really want it?
Somebody must have somewhere.
Yeah. It's Dan Brown time somewhere.
Yeah, well, it's here now.
You know what? It's like a palate cleanser. I know we were talking about this online a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
I greatly enjoy our TV show and movie podcasts that we do. It's nice to step away from that and do something that's not TV or movie based.
To prove to the world that we are at least quasi-literate.
Yes, that we do read things on paper.
But it's only quasi because this is the Dan Brown episode.
Yes, and obviously we will be touching on some of the movies that have been made and movies to be made from this. But yeah, we're gonna try and show that we is literate.
Yes, that we can read books that go on sale in airports.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I will openly mock. I have a lot of things that I love that I know aren't the best. Dan Brown kind of has
Gymkhana.
Oh, wow. Sir. I was more talking about my love of Aqua.
Ah, yeah, yes.
True.
Because you are a Barbie girl.
And look, made of plastic. It's fantastic. So, what are your thoughts overall of the Dan Brown experience? For those who are unaware, Dan Brown is the guy who wrote Vinci Code and blarga, blarga, blarga.
Angels and Demons, Lost Symbol, all that stuff.
Castaway, Forrest Gump.
When I first...
It's not true.
I didn't get into Dan... Number one, I didn't get into the Dan Brown craze.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Da Vinci Code had been on the bestseller list for weeks and weeks and weeks. And eventually I was like, you know what? I'm not, like, jumping on the bandwagon, but I'm curious as to what all the hype is about.
Sure.
So, let me pick it up and read it. And I gotta tell you, it was a fun book. It was an interesting book. It was a creative book.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't lose sight of it from the beginning, that this is a guy who will take some truths, and some of them he will twist a little bit, the other ones he will completely leave alone, and then I will fabricate a story around some of these truths.
Right.
And that's, you know, a lot of these, you know, TV shows and movies, you know, that's the best way to lie. There's just enough truth to make the lie believable.
Exactly.
And I get that. And it's almost like you almost want your last name to be Snopes during this point in time. Because there were people who were running around, you know, Home Alone face, face in their hands going, did you know that you know, Leonardo da Vinci painted all these? No, he didn't. Stop, put the Kool-Aid down and put the book down. And people got a little bit too into it, you know. They're looking through Burkittsville for da Vinci paintings, and so you're just like, okay. All those Blair Witch people who completely got sucked in were the same people who got sucked in by the Dan Brown stuff.
Look, I don't want to say that I totally fell for the Blair Witch Project, but I let the hype get to me on that one. But I will say that with me with Dan Brown, so much of it was that I was told about it, and I was told that it was like almost like a scavenger hunt book.
Sure.
And I love, like, It's Mad, 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 Mad World.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Million Dollar Mystery. Like, I love those movies. So a movie where they go from clue to clue to clue to clue. I watch Blue's Clues just for fun. Like, it's... So I was like, I'm in. Plus,
I want you to know Ryan Connor just went, yes!
I used to call my niece because she was a huge Blue's Clues fan. So my sister would be on the phone, put Michaela on the phone. Why? Just put her on the phone. Mom, Blue's on the phone.
Nice.
But yeah, I love stuff like that. So this was like right up my alley. And, I enjoyed Da Vinci Code for what it was. I mean, once again, you sit there and you go, it's a book. It's a piece of fiction. And then you watch as, you know, Fox asks the world if it's real.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to write an engaging story that sucks you in and you enjoy and you want to keep reading.
Right.
When you're making everything up, you know, I'll go on record. Harry Potter. I loved all the books. First book, I started reading it, couldn't put it down. But
it wasn't until you got to Hogwarts that you realized how real it was.
No, I'm saying except for a few locations in London, everything she did was pretty much made up, you know, out of her imagination. It's a lot more difficult to say, I want to take these 50 real-world actual things and incorporate them into a fiction story that makes sense. That, to me, is a little bit more difficult and challenging because you are kind of limited and handcuffed by the real stuff that you want to incorporate.
And I think that's, you know, if there's one great foible with how this whole thing is, because at the beginning of that, I think it's the Da Vinci Code. I don't know whether it's in all the others, but I know it's in Da Vinci Code at the beginning. It has that some of the things in this book are based on fact and some of the things this book are based on fiction. But when you tell people that some of this is based on fact, but you don't really let them know, because of course it would ruin it if you're like, this is fake and this is real.
Sure.
People are just going to extrapolate what they think is fake and what they think is real.
Well, that's just it. He never put in there, this is fiction. It was always, I'm going to hit you with cold, hard facts. Fact. Opus Dei is a religion. They do have a base on this street in New York, and this is what their people do. Fact. CERN is in Switzerland and France, and they are working on, you know, finding the God particle and everything else. So he gives you that right up front, and that it greatly blurs the line between what's real and what he created. And that's intentional because he doesn't want you to know where that line is.
But at the same time, it's, you know, it's the one thing that probably got him as much bad press as it did the good, was because now you have all these people sitting there going, no, he was totally, this is not fact at all. Well, no, that part isn't, idiot.
Right, yeah.
I mean, do you remember the original, I'm sure you've seen the original Night of the Living Dead at the beginning, this based on true events?
Yeah, yeah.
As a kid, man, that fucked with me.
Sure, well, Leatherface.
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This, the following movie is based on true events. And you're like, oh my God, there's a guy with a leather mitt. No, not really, but
but there was a thing, and that's vaguely based on...
Based on true events means at one time somebody held a chainsaw and cut something. Yeah. Oh my God!
It wasn't until
He's trimming his hedges!
Till I was like 16, 17, where somebody was just like, it's not based on real facts, asshole.
Yeah.
Well, no, I understand there wasn't zombies, but that there might have been an experiment that raised the... Shut up.
Yeah, no, the real events that the movie is based on is a guy walked into his kitchen, and then there were four people hanging out in the living room. Right. Those really happened.
There was a black dude that was shot once.
Exactly.
Spoiler.
Ta-da! So there we go. So Dan Brown.
Dun, dun, dun.
Let's talk a little bit about Dan himself. Good old Danny boy.
Oh, sure, because...
Well,
we are,
you know,
Dan,
in some research, there were some things that I were completely unaware of, like the fact that he started his career as a pianist and pop singer.
Yeah. Alanis Morissette, Dan Brown, like, does everybody do
what?
This?
Qua?
Do you think before when the show's over for the end song, we'll see if we can get a Dan Brown hit.
Oh, maybe we can dig one of those up.
I think.
We'd be lucky if we could find one.
I have some internet magic fingers.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he only sold like a couple hundred copies of like two or three different albums that he put out. And I think a lot of the complaints were that every album that he recorded sounded like the previous album. Or, you know, if you play them backwards, there were clues that led you to the liner notes of the previous album.
They sounded exactly the same.
Yeah, I don't know.
The whole song was a palindrome.
That kind of threw me. You know what? Maybe we should bring this up right now. Just so folks know, this entire podcast, in its entirety, is going to be one of those things that you can read backwards.
Oh, an ambigram.
Yeah, it's an ambigram. This entire podcast.
Just flip this podcast upside down.
It will. It's going to sound just as shitty backwards as it does when you play forwards.
But he did. He did have a CD named Angels and Demons. Ooh.
Did he really?
Yeah.
See, I missed that page. He had a
1994 CD titled Angels and Demons.
Wow.
And he used the same ambigram thing, the upside down for it.
That's wow. I mean
I highlighted passages too.
Oh, there you go. So is that movie, so there we can say that book was based on actual,
a soundtrack.
Based on actual events. Because I did have an ambigram of Angels and Demons, so now we're just going to extrapolate an entire book out of a failed second album that I put out.
Is it that easy that I could just sit there and I could like draw a picture of a dinosaur and be like, this whole thing is based on true facts?
Exactly. Land of the Lost.
Oh, exactly.
Based on real life events.
But then he decided that the pop world was not for him.
Yeah, good thing that, too.
Well, if you ask some people, the writing world ain't for him either.
Well, yeah, this is true. Dan Brown's ninth album featuring Kesha. I mean, come on. At some point, that eighth shoe has to drop, and you have to know, you know what? Maybe singing songwriting, not necessarily for me.
Just trying to. I was trying to figure out what Dan Brown lyrics might be. Like, just throw in T-Pain in there. Yeah! Okay!
Two chains! Ugh. So when we were going through the list of his books, I will admit that I imagined them in an incorrect order.
And I think I had the same thought that you did, just because, did you have the same experience where after you read Da Vinci Code that you were like, I liked that enough to go see what else he did?
Yes.
And not because I did the same
thing. I had a friend I worked with brought me all of his books, and I said, oh, okay. And the order I read them in was Digital Fortress, Deception Point, Angels and Demons, mm-hmm. Da Vinci Code.
Mine was similar.
So I think mentally I just put all the Robert Langdon books together.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
But that wasn't actually what happened. It was one book, then Angels and Demons, then another book, and then the rest of his stuff, which I always found odd. We were just talking about before the podcast, because I always felt the Robert Langdon character was a evolution of previous hero types that he had in his other books,
right.
And he kept refining until he ended up with the Robert Langdon character.
Which that tells you right there that he, in the same way, did you ever read Dean Koontz? Have you ever read any Dean Koontz? Kind of like the Bargain Basement Stephen King?
Yeah, kind of very little.
Dean Koontz kind of has the same male lead in 50% of his books.
Right.
So it's not altogether unheard of that, you know, you look at the other two books that he did and you're like, this character's kind of like Robert Langdon. This character's kind of like Robert Langdon. You know what? They're all fucking Robert Langdon.
Yeah. No, that's true. And I think what happened was he went back and looked at, after Da Vinci Code blew the, because that really put him on the map.
Mm.
You know, nobody, you never heard people, I mean, sure, you know,
I was excited for the movie.
Hardcore
the
bookies
thing.
And stuff, yeah. and you know, novel readers probably knew of Dan Brown, but your average person on the street didn't know dick about Dan Brown until Da Vinci Code came out, and all of a sudden there were all these Discovery Channel specials of, you know, the secrets of the Da Vinci Code and everything else and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, where he got it wrong, is this
exactly.
true?
Yeah, so
the real Holy Grail.
That happened, and people went, let me go back and read this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look, I have no proof to this, I'm just guessing, but I'm sure that if you look back at post-Da Vinci Code book sales, Angels and Demons was probably the next highest seller because it had that Robert Langdon character.
That makes sense.
And was kind of a prequel to Angels and Demons, Da Vinci Code.
Of course.
So I think once he realized that, it was, well, let's give the public more of what they want, and now everything that I write, we're going to make a Robert Langdon book, a Robert Langdon book, a Robert Langdon book.
Makes sense. Makes sense to me anyway. I think out of the two Dan Brown's, I like Digital Fortress more than I liked Deception Point.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you're more of a computer guy.
Yeah,
so
that's why.
I think that might be why.
And there's when we get to the other one, I remember when I read it, when I was finished with it, I looked at my girlfriend at the time and I said, this book was only to prove that Dan Brown knows more about boats than I know about anything. Like, that's,
yeah, I immediately know where you're going with that.
Yeah,
I'll agree with it, but we'll get there in time.
But yeah, digital, because I read a lot of cyber fiction, or at least I used to. I used to, you know, uh-huh. Neal Stephenson and William Gibson. So an action science fictiony techie book, even though, you know, some of the tech may be sort of cornball.
Right, right.
I'm right in there. You know?
Sure.
I went and I saw The Net in the theater because I thought it was going to be better than it actually, well, obviously was.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, cool, a movie about, you know, secret spy bullshit. I'm in. And then
exactly.
Sandra Bullock.
Yeah. Great Sucker Punch. Contractually obligated to throw that
phrase
out.
That's fair. I'm just wondering whether there's any other girls we're going to mention during this episode that we might just save that for. Because Sandra Bullock? All right, fine.
Well, hey, what was the movie she was in? Miss
Congeniality?
Yeah, yeah. Miss Congeniality, yeah.
All right, fair enough. You know what? She's adorable in Speed.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this is not the Sandra Bullock episode.
You'll save that for
Dan Brown.
The hardest writing man in show business.
So Digital Fortress.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're the computer techie guy.
Right.
Why don't you take us through Digital Fortress real quick?
Okay. Now you're going to ask me to try and sum up something that I read 3 days ago. Rather, the summation of a book I read like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a code-breaking book. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It was a lot of. I'm going to be dead honest. I don't remember. I was focusing on all of the.
It's, you know,
the Da Vinci Code stuff.
It's there's a computer that has a code-breaking program.
Yeah.
You know, and if it gets out into the wrong hands, it's almost the book version of Sneakers. If you think about it,
it's phenomenal.
Fantastic. C-Tech Astronomy.
Oh, awesome. Dude. Do you know how many notebooks I had in high school that said My Socrates notebook on it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's that whole, you know, trope of we have something that can decode anything. We don't want it to fall into the wrong hands. Yet it's kind of falling into the wrong hands by the people who are saying they don't want it to fall in the wrong hands. And it really kind of started in hindsight the cookie cutterness of being able to tell through Dan Brown's writing style.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is the good guy.
Yep.
Okay, this guy right here, he's going to be the bad guy. This is the guy he wants me to think is the bad guy until he does something awesome 113 pages from now, and we realize that he's been working for the good guy the whole time. Again, not a Robert Langdon book, but definitely had shades of Robert Langdon.
Because it was his one female. It was his one female hero.
Correct. Susan Fletcher, I believe, was the hero in that one. But very, very Langdon qualities.
Well, totally. She was, and I don't remember, because all of his heroes have a flaw.
Sure.
You know, they all have a phobia or a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll get to Langdon's when we get there. But,
sure.
But I do remember distinctly that another Dan Brown-like catchphrase is, each one of them has a crippling thing that they're going to clearly confront in the book.
Every book they're in. Yes. No, I agree.
Yeah, I don't remember what hers was. Was she afraid of plaid? I don't remember. I don't even think it says it in our little summations here.
Yeah, I don't believe it does either. But the
I know she had one.
The funny thing is that a lot of people will immediately go to Google stuff after they read a Dan Brown book to find out
what
more information
BS?
On stuff he mentioned exactly what was bullshit, what was real, or just get a look at some of the pictures or statues or artwork that he talks about. And I'm pretty sure that hits for that sculpture that's out in front of the CIA
mm-hmm.
in Langley, I think it is.
Yeah.
Of all the code, it's like that wavy wall of iron with all the codes that's carved in it.
That was at the end of Da Vinci Code, right? The big code block?
I don't think it was Da Vinci Code, because I thought it was outside of...
Which book is it? I thought
it was in Digital Fortress. I thought it was right outside...
It might be in both.
I thought it was right outside of the CIA headquarters, or NSA headquarters.
We're going to have to double check that, because I remember distinctly there's the block of text and there's a secret code very specifically in Da Vinci Code that I fucking figured out the code for like a year after everybody else in the world was like, yeah, we already knew about that asshole's book's coming out next year.
I'd have to check. I'm not sure that was in there at all. We'll have to check that real quick during one of our little breaks we'll take. But I know that there's
you're probably right. I'm
six or eight
dipshit.
Panels of this big steel thing that's outside either NSA or CIA headquarters.
Yeah.
And if it's eight panels, seven of them have already been decoded.
Mm-hmm.
And that last one, like, still has not to this day. It's like 50 or 60 years have gone by or something, and they've had all these contests, and people have tried to figure it out and break it. It's a Kryptos, I think, is the name of the... That might actually be it. Name
that
of the,
sounds right.
The sculpture.
Yeah, no, that sounds right. And that book, that thing
still has, nobody's been able to figure it out.
And that thing's been featured in, I don't know, in the amount of like tech thriller sort of code books that I've read, because I've read quite a few. It appears in many.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like it's really just been a story fodder piece. I mean,
sure.
Any book with if a book's got cryptography in it,
mm-hmm.
somewhere in there they're going to mention, and there's this thing.
Yeah, yeah. Or we'll have a shot of people sitting on the bench and with it in the background.
Yeah, it'll be right there.
So they can, yeah. But I mean, when you start typing in a Google search, that was like the first thing that came up in the autopop.
Right, right.
For months after that book came out, because everybody wanted to get a look at what the hell they were talking about. I can figure that out. Give me 5 minutes and a pen. No, no, you're not. Just stop. Here, lovely picture. Here, look at it. You're not.
Yeah.
Stop. But yeah, and like I said, first, you never notice it at when you first read it, but once you get to his second book, you start to realize if he doesn't have a cookie cutter, he has a big whiteboard in his writing room of an order of things that he does.
Oh, sure.
And as he goes, okay, did I do this? Check. Did I do this? Check.
Did I do first person perspective from the villain side?
Exactly. Yeah. Check. Do I have an albino? Check. Do I have, you know...
Or well, it's not always an albino, but it is always an imposing figure that
yes.
Unsettles everyone and easily noticeable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The entire book is, you know, from the perspective of the Lollipop Guild. And, you know, everybody thought it was odd when the 8'4" three-armed guy moved into the neighborhood. I wonder who the villain in the Dan Brown book is going to be.
Yeah.
You know, he may as well just wear a T-shirt, you know. Hudson Hawk, why'd you talk, asshole? I'm the villain. He just comes out and tells you 12 minutes into the movie.
Tattoo on his forehead, poor impulse control. We know who it is.
Now I want a hat that says that. Poor impulse control.
That was the villain. One of the villains in Snow Crash, another cyberbook.
Oh, okay.
Yes, tattooed right across his forehead in the day after the tomorrow future. That's what they make you do after you got out of prison. Some poor impulse control.
I see. Why you got sent to the joint? They make you that's awesome.
Love that character. He's fantastic. Every once in a while, you'll see somebody at like a convention.
Right.
And I think I've seen it
once.
Have
that marked across their forehead?
Yeah, they'll have it like marked across their
forehead.
Nice. It's like the one or two people that you see with the H on their forehead, and you're like, Rimmer!
I gotcha.
Yeah.
So what would your tattoo be?
Oh, oof. Lures with kittens. I don't know. Think about it.
Okay. Okay. Mine would just say Christina Ricci.
Mine's similar. Just
throwing it out there.
Mine's more Wednesday Addams. Yours is more
Black
Snake Moan.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Yeah, or, you know, Casper.
It's true.
Either or.
She would be fantastic in Sucker Punch.
Of course. I mean, come on. I was just leaving the pause for our listening audience to roll their eyes and go, yeah, she would be fantastic in Sucker Punch. It's almost like this podcast, that running joke, is almost becoming like a Phil Collins bridge where we're just going to get to a certain point. We're just going to hold the microphone towards the podcast listening audience, and they can all go, she would be great in Sucker Punch. And then, yes, thank you. Off we go.
And one asshole in the back going, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, there you go.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight. That was fantastic. Whew.
Angels and demons.
Angels and demons. I'm going to tell you what hooked me about this one right off the bat. I'm a big mark for the Illuminati.
Also,
I dig stories about them. I dig, you know, information about them. One of my favorite books that I've ever read was the Illuminatus Trilogy.
Oh, Robert Anton Wilson, sir. Yep. Very good.
Fantastic stuff. So, you know, Eye in the Pyramid, Illuminati, Adam Weishaupt, the whole thing. I was like, oh, Illuminati, yes, I will read that book. Fantastic. Didn't mention any of that stuff. You know, no Adam Weishaupt or any of that other
right.
stuff. But still, it gave you, like, a different side of the Illuminati coin. So I was like, oh, I can get into this, definitely. And the artwork that they throw in the book all the ambigrams.
Oh my god, they're phenomenal.
They're absolutely beautiful.
There's I've since found, and if you type it into the Google, you'll find it. There's a company that their website alone is gorgeous because you type in what you want, and then it immediately gives you what the ambigram of that word will be. So
no
oh,
shit.
Oh yeah, I'll show it to you before we leave. Just type in
wow
ambigram products. If you type it into Google, you'll find the website, and it takes a second. It says, give me a minute to load.
Sure, sure.
And whatever you write in, you have like three or four different font choices. And then the gimmick is you can't save the image. They don't let you save the image at all. You can
sure,
figure
sure.
out how to do it. But then they'll take that image and they'll put it on a tie for you. They'll put it on coasters. They'll put it on a book for you, whatever you want.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's pretty, pretty neat.
That's nice.
And I did it with Rev Voice. I did it with James Hatton just to see
oh,
what it
sure.
was.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
I do. To this day, I still want a Rev Voice ambigram tie. I think that would be
pretty
baller.
Oh, that's pretty hot. We'll have to see about something-something cast t-shirts or something
ooh,
like that.
Something-something cast upside ambigram. Down. It says.
Yep. upside down, backwards. Seventh.
We're not paying for your damn mammograms. Get them yourself.
Exactly. Angels and Demons.
I also like this book because I knew, up until this point, I knew nothing about the Pope. Absolutely nothing about, like, the whole mystery surrounding how you raise up a Pope, you know, how a Pope becomes a law.
Right. Sure. The whole white smoke, black smoke thing.
I had no idea. So,
okay.
For that, you know.
A little background into the, you know, whole Catholic mysticism of it. Very cool.
So I dug on that. And then, but this was our first introduction to Mr. Langdon.
Yes, it was. And again, going back to our, you know, opening salvo, as it were, very difficult to do a story where you're taking statues by a certain artist that actually do form a cross if you look at a map of Rome.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to fish that into a story and flesh it out and have that story make sense without jumping through a bunch of, you know, preconceived hoops. It was really quite an impressive story.
And a lot of that, I'm sure that, you know, I don't think Dan Brown was the first one to ever note the cross shape and the weird shape of the actual Vatican City.
Sure.
But I did enjoy him tying all of that back into the constructors of the town and how the Illuminati built all of it. I enjoyed the shit out of it. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it.
What hooked me for
these
books.
Do you go to Italy and say, okay, I want to these 4 points I'm going to use to make a cross, and I'm going to use this as the center point. So we got to start with the castle as a center point. And then I'm going to make a cross. So I'm just going to go out, like, you know, a mile and a half in this direction. What do I see? Oh, look, I have all these things. And this is, oh, and this guy did a statue over down here, too. And, I mean, just the forethought or the planning that goes into something like that is pretty amazing if you look at it in hindsight. So that I definitely give him creative credit for.
Thoroughly. This also, let's see, what was it? Oh, blah. My brain just derailed.
Statues, obelisks.
I was going to say what I find more impressive about that is
rides here.
All right,
none of that's coming through.
So you look back that somebody back in the day when they were designing the city, maybe not all of the things he put in there, but there's quite a few of them that were probably on purpose. You know, the shape of the city and what have
you. Sure.
Somebody came up with that back, like, whatever it was, 1,000 years ago, sat there and said, this is what we're going to do to design the city, and it's going to be this way, and that's the way we're going to do it. That's fucking impressive. I can't organize my bookshelves.
Well, I mean, when you think of it that it's Vatican City.
Right.
You're like, okay, there are certain things I'm sure, you know, certain symbolism I'm sure we're going to see in it. But the fact that you go through and you know, you do the whole obelisk thing, which is not necessarily, you know, a completely Christian symbol. And like I said, you go through and you find all these things that are you know, statues and artwork and everything else that are done by the same artist.
What I did remember very distinctly was, and this was, he does it more in this than he did, or the Robert Langdon books I should say, other than his other two, and I like it, even though it's almost pompous, where he goes and you're in the story, you're moving action. Robert Langdon then takes a moment to sit there and go, and you might know about this because this is what you would commonly refer to as. And you're like, oh, neat, that's a thing. And he gives you the history of an object. I think they're like this one, the Swiss Guard. And they go very distinctly into, he explains the
uniform or the...
No, the symbol and the, what do you call it? The little thing that you keep in your pocket that has all the tools on it?
Pocket knife?
No.
The Swiss Army knife?
That's the one.
Pocket knife?
Right. But I'm saying he goes into the whole symbol on the Swiss Army knife because it was the original tool of the Swiss Army, and he gives you like a whole little subversive package. He gives you a whole little paragraph about all of that stuff.
He makes you a little bit smarter.
Yeah.
With, you know, with his
clearly it hasn't stuck.
Sure.
But, and one thing I did notice, and they kind of dress it in each of the Robert Langdon books after this, they kind of keep mention. They mention more than once. Yeah, it was kind of part of that whole Pope thing. This just kind of starts the craze of Robert Langdon. His right. narrative sort of begins here, which I find I at least respect him for. It's not just Indiana Jones goes from place to place to place and nobody ever remembers, hey, isn't that the guy that fucking found the Ark of the Covenant?
Sure. No, you know, no, there's definitely...
He's got a cult of personality.
His Pope connection.
Yeah. The Pope connection!
Yeah, exactly.
With Chuck Woolery.
Oh, see, I was picturing him at like the top of a flight of stairs with the Pope down at the bottom shooting him, like a la French Connection.
Ah, very good.
Kind of thing.
I was thinking...
The Pope connection.
Two different ways we went on that.
There you go.
Both of them exceptionally gotcha. Obscure.
Oh, yeah.
Both of them retardedly obscure.
Yes, exactly. Both of them for our entertainment alone. But yes, again, you know, he kind of becomes... He's definitely got a... he's got an in with Vatican City now.
Yes.
You know, and it was also kind of a... kind of the end of a running gag that he kind of had in that book where for years he had been petitioning the Vatican to get a look at their secret Vatican library and they kept nine, you know, denying him. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden, oh, but I have to because it's for the sake of national security. Okay. You know, and it kind of like he finally gets that aha moment to go down. Into the Vatican library.
Into the deep library. I remember that distinctly where he goes into the room and he has to wear the gloves and use like tweezers to go page to page.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets into antimatter and all that other wacky BS.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I found, you know, he at the same time that he's addressing all these historical thingies and making connections that other people generally wouldn't think about, there is some like futuristic contemporary science fiction in there. Antimatter, okay. Antimatter spheres and explosions and all that wackiness. I mean, I believe there's an actual like sphere of antimatter in the book, if I remember
yeah,
correctly.
Well, there's a antimatter particle, yeah. Like a dark matter particle.
And it's the whole
threat.
And
it's funny because when the book came out, I don't necessarily know that that was as much on the public consciousness
no.
as it was when the movie came out. Because by the time the movie came out, there was already rumblings of what's going to happen when they turn on the Large Hadron Collider
right.
and everything else. And that's what CERN is doing. That's the whole thing. They have a goddamn, you know, 28-mile thing that goes through two different countries. And they're going to smash atoms together to see the beginning of the universe and find the God particle. And that's what this book was about.
Yeah.
Like 4 years before anybody really gave a rat's ass about that. So there you go. Kudos.
Yeah.
Dan Brown, kudos. Bringing stuff topically like the Edsel. Well before its time.
What did Inferno bring to... We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there.
So from Angels and Demons, we go to Deception Point.
Yes.
This, my favorite.
Really?
Out of the non-Robert Langdon books.
Well, I guess we had a 50-50, so this makes
because
sense.
I am very much the Ancient Aliens kind of guy.
Ah.
I am the... You know, I read this and everything... I read this entire book in the sound of Giorgio Tsoukalos' voice. So, you know, this to me was like, oh, cool, you know.
Oh, Nargles.
Yeah, exactly. But at this point, again, especially from having read, you know, we've read Digital Fortress.
Mm-hmm.
Good book, good adventure, nice tale, engaging, kept us reading. Now we get onto the Robert Langdon stuff. Different character, but we start to see echoes of the first hero
oh, thoroughly.
In Robert Langdon, in their mannerisms, in the way they figure stuff out. And now we start to see echoes in the way Dan Brown writes, the way he presents things, the way he explains things, the way he cuts his chapters
oh, yes.
from running plot line to running plot line. Oh, my God, guy got a gun on my head, cocks the gun, pulls the trigger. Over in a coffee shop, James Hatton orders a biscotti. Biscottis were invented in the 18th century when you... and you're just, okay, now I have a 45-minute, 8-page dissertation on how biscottis were created. What the fuck happened to the bullet that just left the goddamn gun?
Next
over
chapter, yeah, you
exactly.
are watching all of this going on from afar.
Yeah, yeah exactly.
You know, that's the real villain, I'm sure.
Yeah, so... you start to see echoes and patterns
yeah, so
in a lot of his work. That being said, Deception Point, very much about like Ancient Alien kind of stuff.
Life, this is
life
I
forms
remember the
that
least.
Came before humanity. where life on Earth began. You've got the base in Antarctica, and they're doing this drilling into this ice shelf,
mm-hmm.
and they find this meteor that dates back, you know, before the dawn of man, before, you know, most of recorded history, actually before pre-recorded history, and you're finding bits of DNA and creatures and stuff like that, and they're talking about this basically being like the seed of life on this planet. Where did it come from? Must have come from another planet. You know, was Earth seeded? And you find out that it's all, you know, a sham. Somebody
right.
wanted to make it look that way, so we drilled into the ice shelf from the underneath and planted the meteor and made it look old. And okay,
I forgot. Until you went to your summation right there.
Right.
I had utterly forgotten about this book, other than I remember, as I mentioned earlier, I remember distinctly at one point in time stopping reading, going, this motherfucker knows so much about boats.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
It's back to the whole, I'm going to give you enough truth to make the lie believable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I lay out in 14 pages of detail how this guy is controlling his sailboat in a raging storm
right.
and what he's doing, and, you know, the boat people out there go, fucking A, this guy's got it right. This is exactly what you're supposed to do. Da da da.
Yeah.
There really are asteroids planted under the ice shelf, because you're just extrapolating, well, this is right, so obviously there are four-headed pink unicorns that seeded the planet with...
Where?
No.
Oh, sorry.
No. But that's how the human brain works, because there are many people out there who will intentionally gray that wall.
But, and I just find it amazing that I had forgotten, because I love alien bullshit, too. Like, I love all that sort of stuff, and
right.
This book seemingly was forgettable for me. Other than the boat thing. Other than I think I just got, like, I go on my kicks. Like, I forgot all about how The Hobbit ended until I reread it a couple years ago.
Okay.
Forgot all about it. And then I reread it just on a lark. I'm going to reread The Hobbit and see how it goes. I swear to God, I thought Bilbo killed Smaug.
It wasn't Bilbo.
Bilbo. I thought Bilbo killed Smaug.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Bilbo.
I somehow, like, mixed it with, like,
it
David and Goliath.
It was the archer dude.
Yeah, it was just some random dude on page 340.
Yeah.
They explain the bow, they explain the arrow, Smaug's dead, the
exactly,
end.
Exactly, he's got a bow. Ta-da! I will say...
My ending's better.
...that I think the main reason this book gets lost is, again, I think many people do what we did. They start with one book... And then they go and they find the other books written by him.
I did go on a tear. Yeah.
Probably read them out of order and then decide which ones are their favorite. So, you know what? I like this one the most. So Deception Point Digital Fortress kind of, you know, blurs yep. into the background, so to speak.
And not for, I mean, I go through my reading periods where I go through a couple books, like, real quick, like, babada, babada, babada.
Right.
Some of the ones in the middle. I've picked up books. I've gotten two chapters in before I go, oh, I read this.
Yeah,
I'm really bad about that. So the fact that I missed out on some stuff in this one, not really that shocking.
A bunch of my notes apparently have this Peru. I hate that. Anyway.
Fair enough.
So yeah, Deception Point, again, you start to almost... eye-rollingly
mm-hmm.
see the same kind of patterns over and over again. And again, a non-Langdon book, but I think whatever... I know at least for me, even though I read them out of order, you visualize these people, except obviously for Digital Fortress, because mm-hmm. the lead character was female.
Right.
You kind of visualize them almost the same way.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, now this guy in Deception Point is Tom Hanks in, you know, Deadliest Catch here on a boat, keeping his boat from overturning while he's, you know, looking for this ice shelf with alien life in it.
Let's address that for a minute. Tom Hanks.
Okay.
So we might as well get, since we're about to jump into Da Vinci Code.
Right. And we did talk about Angels and Demons already.
Yeah.
Did become a movie.
But it was the second one. It's weird.
Very weird. Yeah. Prequel book, sequel movie.
Yeah.
Odd.
But I guess that's also similar to, as we said, probably how people read them.
True.
So... But do you think Tom Hanks was a good choice?
Acting-wise, yes.
Well, that's...
Looks, not so much.
Fair.
I think everybody had a problem with the hair, whatever that
yeah.
hairpiece thing he had.
I mean, acting wise, saying that Tom Hanks couldn't play the part is like, that's, you're stupid.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Hanks can act his way through anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, did you ever have a guy that you were like, that's the guy I think should play Matthew? I was about to say mine, which is Matthew McConaughey. But did you have somebody
to play Robert Langdon?
Yeah.
Really? Matthew McConaughey?
That was my.
I'm not seeing it.
It was very specifically him from Contact that made me think that.
I'm going to say, and I'm just coming up with this now. This was nothing that was preconceived back when the books. If there was any, I'm going to come up with two, and I'd have to say either Paul Bettany or Michael Fassbender.
Okay.
And those are basically just because
I could definitely see Fassbender.
I will watch pretty much anything with those guys in it. I think they're fantastic actors. I think they'd be great. Bettany's fantastic. I think he's a great actor. Even if you're gonna, you know, judge it on a scale of official acting grades, I don't know what he'd come in at versus like a Laurence Olivier or a Tom Hanks or anything like that. But you know what? If you're going to judge it on will people pay money to put asses in seats and watch something he's in, I'm there.
What's his name again? I'm going to throw because
Paul Bettany.
Bettany.
He played Chaucer in A Knight's Tale. He does the voice for Jarvis in Iron Man.
Oh.
He played the angel in Legion, the good angel who didn't want to, you know, turn the baby over.
You're right. I could see that.
I could definitely see him. And Michael Fassbender.
Fassbender, I agree with one. Fassbender, you said that, I had
a guy crush on since Inglourious Bastards. I just thought he was great. But I could see either one of those.
Two different direct ways. I could see both of them. I for whatever reason, when they listed off like who's the big name going to be.
Right.
And I saw Matthew McConaughey, and I think it's only because of Contact, because of the part he played
could
in Contact.
Be. Sure. And the reason I see these two is in my brain, I see Fassbender playing the sitting at a desk covered in papers and open books trying to crack a code logically.
Yeah.
Yet Bettany is the one I see, you know, running through London. I have to get 15 miles in 18 seconds before the bomb goes off and then still decode some cryptography kind of thing.
And then take the key locker.
Yeah, he's got kind of like, you know, the frantic... Got to figure this out kind of look where I definitely see Fassbender as the
suave motherfucker.
So,
yeah.
Let me figure this out. You know, he's much more the controlled aspect of it. But again, both of them great guys.
Fair enough.
Not that I, you know, hang out with them or anything.
I mean, me and Joe
Podcast
Namath.
Rob, yeah. Michael Fassbender, not like this.
I was going to say
oh,
me
hang
and...
Hang on a second.
Oh, what is... You know, Robert Langdon... Rob L, your last name starts with L. What? Wait a minute.
I gotta take this real quick. I'm sorry. It's the Pope.
The Pope.
Sì, grazie. Sono contento che ti è piaciuto il nostro Fast and Furious episodio. Grazie. Ci sono registrazioni. Ti chiamerò più tardi.
He's on his phone.
Sì. Grazie. Sorry, that was the Pope.
The Pope, big hat.
Yeah, big hat and all.
Yeah, yeah. Why
he's a big Fast and Furious fan. Where were we?
Apparently talking about the Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code, right? Robert Langdon, second Robert Langdon book.
Yes. First move. Okay. All right. Yeah, we'll just get back into this. Tom Hanks. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, this is the one where he starts off in the Louvre.
Right, the Louvre.
With the guy doing the TikTok positioning and the...
Yes.
Off to
actually,
the...
he starts out in bed, and this also becomes...
Yes.
This also becomes like a Robert Langdon thing, which is why I was joking about all the sirens outside the door.
Can you believe you just got a fucking phone call from the...
This becomes a Robert Langdon thing. I'm sitting in my boxers. I'm watching last night's episode of Breaking Bad. Door busts in. Three guys in, you know, men in black suits drag him out.
We have
this picture. We need you to decode. What? Where? What? What do you mean I'm in Idaho? How did I get here? And all of a sudden he's, you know, whisked off to a magical land somewhere. So, yeah, starts out in bed, wakes up in the Louvre. What the fuck is going on?